back in the 90s and the noughties, used to see a lot of Richard on board the aircraft. It was watching his behavior on the flight and coming on and assuming that he would go straight to upper class. He went down to economy and he had, I always remember him having the same bag that I had, like a cabin crew bag, just like this gray, faceless bag. And he could have had any label that he wanted in the world, clearly.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast. It's the weekly show that brings you inspiring interviews with senior leaders and genuine subject matter experts, all designed to help you be the very best leader you can possibly be. It's my gift to you and it's completely free. In today's episode, I'm talking to Alex Chisnell, a man who literally spent several years working alongside Sir Richard Branson on board Virgin Atlantic flights. You've no doubt read a book or two written by Richard Branson. You've seen many of his quotes shared on social media and heard many of the stories about how he operates as a leader and entrepreneur. But today, you get to listen to Alex's first-hand experience of working alongside him. Alex himself has a pretty eclectic career. He started out working for the BBC in journalism before jacking it all in to go and explore the world as cabin crew with Virgin Atlantic, where he progressed up through the ranks. Since then, he's become a serial entrepreneur, starting multiple businesses. In today's episode, you will learn how to create a very simple, uncomplicated vision or flight plan, to use Alex's term, for your team. You'll learn three top tips for quickly helping new teams to form and work well together. You'll learn some of the practical leadership and management tips that Alex learned from working alongside Sir Richard Branson on those Virgin Atlantic flights. You'll also learn the importance of relationship building, maintaining connections with your colleagues, suppliers, stakeholders, and customers, and more importantly, how to do it. Plus, lots more. That's enough of an introduction, though. Let's dive right in to this week's episode and my conversation with Alex Chisnell. Alex, let me start off by asking you, what is your first memorable experience of leadership in the workplace, good or bad? And what did you learn from that?
I think I'd have to go for my time at Virgin Atlantic, which I joined. I'd literally gone from uni to the BBC as a trainee journalist. And from there, I decided to chuck it all in and go see the world, join Virgin Atlantic as cabin crew, as a flight attendant. And my boss at the time, Richard Branson, Sir Richard Branson now, at a young age, I was 24 when I joined, and back in the 90s and the noughties, used to see a lot of Richard on board the aircraft. Don't see so much of him now that he's moved to Necker Island. It was watching his behavior on the flight and coming on and assuming that he would go straight into upper class, straight into one of the beds, go to sleep for the duration of the flight. I think it was LA, I could be wrong. But he went down to economy and he had, I always remember him having the same bag that I had, like a cabin crew bag, just like this gray, faceless bag. And he could have had any label that he wanted in the world, clearly. And sitting down into a seat in economy and then spending the entire flight, or what seemed like to me anyway, the entire flight, just going round with a notepad. I think it was even a pencil. I don't even think it was a pen, but just talking to people and asking them what their experience of Virgin Atlantic was. And that really, really stuck with me. And just seeing, you know, that was somebody who could have spent the flight in upper class, drinking all the finest wines and champagnes, having a great meal, etc. But he decided to spend it at the coalface, just finding out, you know, getting real-time feedback from his customers. And that stuck with me all these years. And, you know, other examples of them being out with him, you know, being in room parties in hotels and things like that, and just seeing how it acted around people. And, you know, that image that most people probably have of this, you know, larger than life, gregarious character. But actually speaking to him one-on-one, he wasn't that comfortable, you know, and he stuttered quite a lot when you were speaking to him like that. But seeing him, you know, in his natural elements, you know, as that kind of social animal that most people think he is, really stuck with me at a young age. And ultimately, you know, fast forward, I was there 16 and a half, 17 years, ultimately, maybe unbeknown to me at the time, especially those early years, ultimately led for me to leaving and deciding to become an entrepreneur myself and start on my own business. And now I'm on, I think, iteration 4. And got reeled back into the Virgin Group at some point through Virgin Startup, his not-for-profit. So I would say, long-winded answer, I'm afraid, which is typical of me, but I would say that one, Richard Branson, for sure.
Fascinating, or fortuitous, rather, that you mentioned that example, because I love to read. I love reading business and leadership books. I think I've read most of Sir Richard Branson's. And that piece around him always carrying a notepad and pencil is something that crops up quite a lot. You hear those stories, how he always does it, makes notes, and straight away would follow up and action those ideas. So I was going to ask you about that, but you actually saw him living and breathing that mindset.
Yeah, I certainly did. And it's, again, quite a nice trait, I suppose, of him that every year you'd get a Christmas present, but it was usually one of his books. I remember one year it was a bottle of champagne from his vineyard in France, which was extra special, which we still have one here at home, still unopened. But yeah, that bit about actioning stuff, that definitely happened as well. You know, I remember then the FSM, the flight service manager, which I ultimately became myself. Literally at the end of the flight, you know, he'd be following up with you and saying, you know, this needs to be actioned. I can't remember specific examples, but that's definitely something that he would follow up on. And I know, you know, at the time, some of the FSMs, the flight service managers who were pretty close with him, and a friend of mine, Malcolm McKinnon, I remember, he used to have regular conversations. He was like one of the first ever employees, and he would have regular conversations from Richard, just finding out, you know, and it was, I'm sure it was around that time when there were balloting for strikes and that kind of thing. And he just wanted to kind of detect the mood of the workforce, what it was, you know, and also other examples that I've heard through my, so my wife was a beauty therapist in upper class. So she'd be doing manicures and massages in upper class. And I always remember her telling me a story that one of the girls who was a beauty therapist went on to become the head of all of the beauty therapy salons in all of his resorts around the world. So, you know, resort in Mallorca, in Marrakesh, Necker Island. And I always remember her saying that he kind of chewed her out over the choice of tiles that was in the salon on Necker Island. And I kind of thought, wow, he's really, you know, attention to detail. There's attention to detail and there's attention to detail. And I thought, well, maybe it's because, you know, he sees it every day. And then it just reminded me, looking out here in Poole, where I'm based, the son of a friend of ours, who's now become a friend of mine, he became the DJ on Necker Island. And I managed to get, for one of my live events, I managed to get Richard on video asking my guest the question. And the guest at the time was Ray Kelvin, founder of Ted Baker Group. And I managed to beam it up on the big screen. And there's Richard with a cup of tea on Necker Island asking the first question. But I remember saying to Ben, who was the DJ, you know, how often do you actually see Richard? And he goes, I sit down with Richard every single day. And he asks me, what's the entertainment this evening? Who are the guests we've got? And he wants to know exactly what's happening before he would then go out and actually press the flesh ultimately. So interesting examples of his leadership style, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm curious as well to go back to that point around Richard feeding back to the flight services manager after you'd been around with a notepad and pencil, getting that feedback. Because I think providing feedback, whether it's good or bad, let's say, is something that so many leaders and managers struggle with, to the point where I was reading some research the other day, and it was something like around just 30% of people believe the feedback they receive actually improves their performance. So were there any little tips or anything you picked up on directly or on the grapevine around how he would give that feedback to people, ultimately to try and make it the best airline in the world, right? Have you got any insights to share there?
You know, having been a flight service manager, you know, you are that link between the flight crew in the cockpit, the cabin crew, and the passengers. And, you know, it wasn't just that speaking to the passengers on board, he would make a point, as I say, of connecting with the cabin crew. And I know he would use these occasions to tap in. But if you were on a flight to the Caribbean, he would always put two names in. He would get all the crew's names, put all the names in a hat, pull out two names, and those two people, instead of staying in the crew hotel in Barbados, would get flown to Necker Island with him.
Wow.
And they were always blonde and female. I've no idea how I never, ever ended up on Necker Island myself, but I've got friends who've been there multiple times. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, he would take the time to sit in with the flight crew and kind of gain their feedback as well, because they were always more prone to striking than than we were, you know, working conditions and that kind of thing. He used to use those occasions down route, you know, i.e. in a hotel, you know, he's buying the drinks. He's put his card behind the bar, but he's buying the drinks. He's taking you to a nightclub. I was there, I remember, launch Virgin Cola in South Africa, one of his not so successful businesses. But he'd be taking that time to get feedback from you. He would make sure that it was put on the flight report, and that flight report, every single flight report obviously gets straight sent to the office from one of the couriers. That would go to the cabin crew manager. That would then get fed back through to all of the flight service managers in our meetings. It's action, isn't it? You know, it's not one of those things that you then set up a committee to look into it, to talk about it, or having a meeting for a meeting's sake. It was very much, you know, that example of him being right at the coalface and being able to feedback directly to those people rather than just going through those official channels. Because he could have just got back and sent an email, but he always very famously to us said, I don't use a computer. I have no idea how to send an email. I don't know if that's still the case, I mean, or whether that's just part of the image, but he definitely took that feedback. He definitely took action, and he did it in the, you know, the quickest way possible to those people who could impact those actions, for sure.
Let me just ask one more question on this, and I'm very conscious of not making this a podcast where I'm interviewing Richard Branson via you as a proxy. But the piece around connecting with all the cabin crew is really interesting to me. I've been doing a lot of deep thinking over the past year for various reasons, really around the power of connection and relationships. It's the subject of the new keynote talk I'm delivering, actually. And if I think back to my own formative leadership experiences in the army and being trained at Sandhurst, one of the things they really taught us again and again was just to get to know your people. Like, if you're going to ask somebody to potentially make the ultimate sacrifice, they wouldn't really do that because of some command structure that was in place. They'd do it because they knew you as their boss knew and cared about them. And that's why it's interesting hearing you talk about Richard Branson doing it on flight, because, again, if we bring in another sort of common leadership tool, like the good old Eisenhower matrix, like building relationships and connection, it's something that, yes, is important, but it rarely seems urgent. And as leaders and managers, we're always going to get drawn to that quadrant one stuff, the urgent and important. So it really is about, I think, understanding the importance of it and finding a way to prioritize it, schedule it, make sure it happens. The question I had this linked to that, and that's really sort of me giving a bit of context. Did it feel very genuine and authentic when he was going around connecting with the staff, I'm more interested in, rather than sort of the passengers on the flights? Did it feel genuine and authentic, and he was doing it because he actually cared and was interested, or did it feel like sort of it was a management practice he'd been taught and was therefore doing?
No, for me, and especially I think at a young, impressionable age, and I think I was a very young 24 when I entered an environment, you know, like that, it felt 100% genuine, that he was genuinely interested. And I suppose if you think of the context at the time, like, I've, you know, your public perception was of this, you know, huge airline, and he owned a record company. And I kind of look back and go, geez, man, he was literally in his 40s in that time. And you think, you know, I'm now 53, and you think it's amazing what he achieved. And the context was really, when you look at it, it actually wasn't a huge airline at the time. They just had, you know, a bunch of planes. They started with one plane, etc. And I think maybe, you know, genuinely, he was interested in finding out how things were going. And you know what it's like being in business yourself, Ben. You never know how tight to the wire things really are when you're interviewing someone. If, you know, oh, shit, we're struggling to make payroll this month. And you kind of look back and you think, I wonder how close to the wire things possibly were in a lot of elements, you know, with landing slots, with striking ballots and all that kind of thing. So I think, yeah, one, he was very genuine. It came across as genuine. It came across as authentic. It's interesting, I suppose, the dynamic, seeing him doing the social animal piece and like coming into the galley on the plane and speaking to a whole bunch of us and being totally comfortable, yet speaking to him one-to-one at the bar at the hotel in LA, it was very stuttery and no eye contact. And you kind of thought, wow, you know, how much of that is, it was a battle between, you mentioned it, you were chatting to your last podcast guest, Kate, about, you know, being introvert and extrovert. And I thought, I wonder how much really is he an introvert at heart and not 100% extrovert. And I'm sure we're all a mixture of the two. I know I am. But yeah, it's an interesting world. Yeah, 100% came across as authentic, genuine, because there wasn't just that one example. You know, it was at the hotel in LA. It was at the Coca-Cola launch. They're the ones who killed him.
Yeah.
The Virgin Cola launch in Johannesburg in the Caribbean, you know, all those kind of different elements. He came across as genuinely interested in what we thought of the hotel. How was the, you know, the staff travel package for us? And he knows he's asking questions. He's only going to get good answers because famously we weren't well paid at Virgin compared to British Airways, but we had the best staff concessions in the world. You could fly anywhere in the world, you know, for £100, you know, and to start with back in 1994, when I joined, it was free. You know, I could take 9 people anywhere in the world for free. Ridiculous, you know, absolutely ridiculous. But that was the trade-off compared to getting 3 times the salary at British Airways.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about Virgin Cola. That's a blast from the past.
Yeah. I've got fond memories of that party, but yeah.
So we spoke a lot there, all triggered by talking about a good leadership example. What's maybe the worst example of leadership you've seen throughout your career and life? And what did you learn from that? Or what vows did you make as a result, perhaps?
I saw a multitude of examples of bad leadership when I was at Virgin as well. And I think it definitely impacted me as I climbed that ladder from cabin crew to senior cabin crew to purser to flight service manager. And just seeing different styles, because the interesting thing is, you know, when you work for an airline, every flight you go on, and that could be, you know, one for a long haul flight, that could be 1 or 2 flights a week even, you know, you would have a different boss every single flight. You would have 17 people, up to 21 people thrown together for, you know, let's say 7, 10-hour flight. So that initial contact you would have with people who would come into a briefing and you would be putting your position down would rub you up the wrong way. And it would be, for example, I can remember this guy and I can remember his nickname. And so you normally go into a briefing and the crew, you know, you'd be like, so where would you like to work today? And that could be, you could, you know, you could work the aisle, you know, more customer face. You could be in the galley, more focused on, you know, that kind of task orientated. And I can remember him already selecting the position, you know, you're this position, you're that position. And then changing those positions when he realized that it was 2 straight guys working together, and he didn't want that. He didn't want 2 straight guys working on the upper deck of the cab. Pretty controversial now when you kind of look back, you know, in the rearview mirror, but he changed the positions of who was working where based on their sexual preference, which sounds ridiculous now, you know. And I can understand, you know, now, having been, you know, a business owner myself, having been a manager myself, I can understand that you would want people to work different positions because you'd want to see how they would work in different environments, and they wouldn't want to get, you know, just have the same people working the same position all the time. You want to improve people's skills in the cabin. You want to improve people's skills in the galley, all those kinds of things. But seeing somebody go out of their way with their own idiosyncrasies maybe on how they thought the dynamic on a flight would work definitely was a lesson to me on how to set the right atmosphere in the briefing to make sure, you know, that everybody, you know, was relaxed, was focused on the job in hand, but not thinking already, not already put you in the wrong frame of mind, already put you into a kind of negative frame of mind. And it's not necessarily bad leadership, but if somebody asks you a question as the manager, instead of them just going up and doing that, there's something wrong with the in-flight entertainment on board the flight. So instead of just going up and rebooting it yourself, actually taking that crew member with you and showing them how you go about doing that, because, you know, quite often would happen in a situation like this, and I'm sure it probably happens in the military as well. You could be in a situation where somebody's sick, injured, wounded, whatever, and somebody has to take on a leadership role that they haven't necessarily been trained for. They've taken over. And it's happened to me many times before I became a flight service manager, where I had to work up a position as the flight service manager, and something happened on board. You know, we had air rage incident. I remember there being triple A-list celebrities on board, and we had to make an unscheduled landing into Iceland to get this person off the aircraft, to be met by the authorities and taken off. You know, different examples like that. So for me, you know, I used to take, you know, see that happen in action and see it happen again and again and again. And I guess people had just been so ingrained as to how they did their job. And it was definitely in the days before Virgin started spending time on kind of developing those leaders. But seeing those examples and going, okay, I'm going to take that and I'm going to utilize what I think is really good leadership, and actually kind of that onboard coaching that you know, on the job coaching that you would do, taking that moment, even in amongst a ridiculously busy flight, to go, let's just spend 5 minutes with this, and that will stay with you then.
Yeah, there's two really fascinating things there that I'd like to dive into in a little bit more detail. One is going back to those crew briefings. I've never really thought about this before, but that's quite a unique experience. And I've got one of my good friend's wife actually is a stewardess for Virgin. So I know the fact that the same crews rarely all work together, but I've never actually paused and thought, well, every time a flight crew goes on another flight, it's essentially a new team coming together for the first time that needs to gel very quickly to work effectively on the flight. So based on that and your experience of being a crew member, being the flight services manager, what tips can you share that people listening could directly kind of use and apply straight away when they're maybe leading a new team, leading some sort of work group, and they very quickly want to get people to gel and set the right atmosphere? What did you pick up over the years?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think it comes back to one of your points earlier, Ben, connection. It was always notable, for example, with the Virgin example again, and I think people can take this in their own workspace of management versus, you know, employees and the different layers of that. Of when the flight crew, the captain or the first officer, would come in and introduce themselves during the briefing, it was noticeable when they did that, because more often than not, back in the day, they wouldn't. The first thing you would see was you'd literally open the cockpit door and just say, you know, hi guys, I'm Alex. What flight details have you got, by the way? Anybody want a cup of tea? You know, that kind of thing. Having that connection, that it's spending the time to introduce yourself is such a basic one, but clearly, you know, in my experience, got ignored many, many times. So I think whether you're a senior manager, taking the time to meet new staff, because, you know, as we've said, every flight could be completely new staff. So taking the time to introduce yourself, I think, goes a long way, and especially is going to really stay with you, no matter what your age, I think, if you've just joined a company. So I think connection is a really good one. I think setting out the vision as well, getting people to buy into that vision. And that could be, you know, as simple as in our scenario of this is the flight plan, you know, this is how long it's going to take. These are the bumps in the journey. You know, it's really, really kind of obvious stuff, and people can kind of take it. But in an airline, it's really obvious like that. This is when you're going to get turbulence. And I think the longer somebody might have been in a management role, they're going to know when there could be turbulence coming along in their own business, when somebody's, you know, coming into a new role, certain times of the year that might be a bit more tricky for the business, etc. So I think, you know, coming out with a flight plan. And then, you know, for us, which was really important, I think, because if you bear in mind, you've got the flight out, then you've got a day or 2 days together or not together, as the case might be, and then flying back again. And you could go that whole length of time down route with not seeing that crew again, if you so choose, to then have to almost start from scratch on the way home. So for me, what was very important was trying to get everybody together, be that in a social occasion down route. That could be, you know, the obvious one is meeting at the bar for a drink, but then equally it could be meeting for breakfast. And I think you can take that yourself in your own work environment. I just saw a friend of mine who I interviewed for my podcast, George Cruz, former England rugby international and British Lion, who's got a wellness company called 4-5 now. and him taking his staff out for a picnic and inviting their partners along, you know, little things like that. And then Christmas, you know, they did something as well that they kind of bonded. So, you know, there are a gazillion different ways you can do that. And again, you know, I found this out myself over Christmas. You know, I went from fully, you know, immersive team there in person before lockdown to then having to completely restructure that and go online. So my team are now, you know, all over the world, but having to bring them together over Christmas and going, okay, what can we do differently? Let's play a game. Let's do something. So one of the team put together a Christmas quiz, you know, stuff like that. And you've just got to, I think, take it and use it for your particular example. But I think 100% connection, you know, vision, and then camaraderie, bringing people together is, you know, vitally important, but can get easily missed.
Yeah, I love it. It's really interesting as well that you mentioned vision there. I think the word vision is one that gets turned into something much bigger than it is, right? It's a word that gets bandied around when we're moving into senior leadership roles and talking about being more strategic. Oh, so you've got to have a vision. But it could be very, very simple, right? You've just proved it there, like the vision for this flight, like this is how we want it to go. This is the flight plan. And you don't need to be a functional head, a business unit director or a CEO to lay out a vision. And actually, I'd never really thought of it in this way or created this sort of metaphor before. But in any business, we could almost say, look, here's the flight plan for the next 3 months. Here are the times when we're going to be really busy that we need to plan for now. Here's what's coming up. Here's when it's going to be a bit quieter. Here's what we want it to look and feel like at the end of this quarter. That's really, really powerful. That's what the great leaders do, right? But the flight plan is a lovely metaphor for it, I think.
For us, it was as simple as we're getting from A to B. We're going from London to New York, and this is what could potentially happen based on past experience and based on the information that we're being given. So no, I think you're right. I think everyone could take a lesson from that and implement that in their own business.
But that's essentially what all that any business is ever trying to do, right? Get from A to B and hopefully enjoy the process of getting there. Like that's leadership for me. It's how do you get from A to B and look after your team whilst you're doing it? Like not much more to it than that.
Yeah. And it's probably the same with a military example, isn't it? This is the mission and this is where we need to get from and get there with everybody still here, you know.
Everybody's still alive, absolutely, yeah. It's a nice little segue mentioning vision there. One of the things I wanted to ask you was, what's your sort of goal and vision for the coming year? As we're recording this, it's first week of January. So what's 2024, all being well, going to look like for you, Alex?
Yes, and it's an interesting one. I just spent time, you know, like a lot of people, resetting over Christmas and New Year, and I'm not finished yet. I think... I've learned from past lessons to kind of eke that out throughout the early time in early January as well, because things can change. And for me, you know, I like to set a big year defining event. And for me, that was going to be running the London Marathon, but I'm having to reset that goal because I just tore the meniscus in my right knee. Basically, haven't been right since I did the New York Marathon the year before. So I think that's definitely my body telling me something. So for me, I'm going to be, you know, reflecting on that, resetting that goal. But within that, for me, it's all about, you know, enjoying life experiences, experience living. And by that, I mean, having something to look forward to, you know, be that, you know, every other month, putting something in there that I can look forward to. And that could be time with me, time individually with my kids, time with my wife. And it's something I've really, I think, reflected on since lockdown. And you'll know this, you know, having kids, etc., is actually reflecting back and going, what do I actually enjoy doing? What lights me up on a daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annual basis? And when you actually break that down, and I'd advise anyone to do it as a useful exercise, you actually, or I realized that wasn't actually doing many of those things. It's like, look, what do I love? If I had an hour left on this planet, what would I do? I would be snowboarding in fresh powder. When was the last time I went skiing? And I looked at it, and it was about 7 years ago. So now I've been once a year. I've just done it twice a year the last 2 years. I love golf. Okay, I play golf once a year at my birthday. Okay, so now it was like every Friday afternoon, finish early and go and play golf with my best friends. All those kinds of things. And I won't go on and on, but I think just taking the time out to actually reflect back on, you know, what lights you up, what you're passionate about, making sure that you're doing it on a regular basis and using those kind of building blocks to frame your year. And, it, you know, like I say, one year defining event and then every other month having something again, like some kind of mini adventure. And it doesn't have to cost any money. It could be going camping under the stars in Scotland, whatever it is. You're just paying for the car park and some food. But whatever it is, before you know it, life goes by very, very quickly, as we all know. And before you know it, it's like, well, if the average human lives, I don't know, 75 years old, how many more of those year-defining events and mini adventures have I actually got in me? So that's been, you know, the kind of deep thinking that I've been doing and is going to frame this year for me, Ben.
Brilliant. I love the piece you mentioned around sort of stopping and thinking about what lights you up. I did a similar exercise actually during one of the COVID lockdowns, and I now share it with clients a lot. I call it the 3 p.m. audit, and it's got nothing to do with 3 o'clock in the afternoon and everything to do with the fact it's an acronym where there's three P's and one M. So basically, I look at the people, the places, the pursuits and the media that you consume. And then I have two columns and I look at what are the things in those categories that energize me, that I want to spend more time doing, that I want to be around, the media I want to be consuming and filling my feeds with. Then also look at across the same categories, what are the ones that drain me? What are the people that sap my energy? What's the media that has a negative effect on me that I don't want to see? And it's really interesting because, to your point, it lets you live life much more intentionally and be much more conscious around using social media versus being the product of it. It's a great exercise to go through. And it can lead to some quite challenging like conversations to make, especially around sort of the people element, but it's super powerful.
I like that. I like the media aspect because that's something that I've made a note of to do this month, which is, again, you know, look back at the different media channels that I use and literally prune what's in there and only see, again, what lights me up, what interests me, and not, you know, somebody else's narrative that's trying to be forced upon me ultimately.
Yeah, like I love being in the mountains, be it walking, climbing, cycling or whatever. Then come lockdown when I couldn't do that, I said, okay, right, let's fill my sort of Instagram feed with kind of anything that's going to show me pictures of the mountains to give me that energy, something to look forward to when we emerge. It's super powerful. Yeah.
It is. No, it's a good one. I think everyone could learn a lot from that, especially this time of year is a perfect time to do it. Eh?
Alex, I've got one final question for you before we wrap up, which is my new go-to question to end every episode. The question is, what is the best mistake that you've ever made?
The first business that I started after leaving Virgin Atlantic, which was retraining as a personal trainer, specializing in sports injury and opening sports injury clinic and then expanding to another clinic. And ultimately, it was at the time the worst experience of my life. It was basically, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. So the one really successful sports injury clinic, the new one, which was in Sandbanks, which you think is going to be, you know, full of really wealthy people paying money for your services. But in reality, they've got second and third homes. They're never there. You can't run a business like a therapy business where you need regular treatment if there's nobody there, etc. So that ultimately was horrendous at the time. You know, everything just snowballed debts wise, couldn't pay the staff, couldn't pay the bills, ultimately got locked out of the treatment rooms by the owner there of the building, etc. It was horrendous. But in hindsight, that has taught me so much that has informed the future decisions that I've made with the businesses that I've had and how I've treated the people in that business, keeping the staff informed as to how the business is going, you know, opening yourself up, you know, being vulnerable, being informed, keeping an eye on the bottom line, all of those things. Yeah, definitely the best mistake that I've ever made. I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but at the time, but in hindsight, yeah, it was something to go through.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. Alex, if people want to find out more about what you do or get in touch, what's the best way for them to do that?
So Screw It, Just Do It is my podcast. If people want to listen to me or view on YouTube, ultimately it's easy to find me. I'm at Alex Chisnell on every social media platform. And you can always email me, alex@podpreneur.co.uk, for those interested in the podcasting space.
Brilliant. Alex, thank you so much for your time today. It's been fascinating hearing your reflections and insights on Sir Richard Branson and the Virgin Group. But equally, it's been interesting hearing about your own leadership kind of journey and tips and what you've learned along the way. There's so much that we've discussed that I think will be really valuable to everybody who's in any sort of leadership or management position. So thank you very much for your time.
Absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed it, sir. Thank you for having me on, Ben.
Thank you for joining Alex and me for this episode of the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as Alex and myself enjoyed recording it. And I also hope that you've taken as much value from it as I did. Before you go, do check out the Leaders Kit Bag episodes. It's the new weekly micro edition of the podcast. Each episode is just 5 or 6 minutes long and focuses on one very practical leadership tip, tactic, or topic. Because it's brand new, I've released the first 4 episodes at once, so you can back-to-back them and binge listen if you want. And once you've listened, do please share them with your colleagues or your team so that we can together improve the leadership capability in our companies, charities, and institutions. After all, I truly believe the world needs great leaders now more than ever. Until next time, thanks for listening. Look after yourself, look after those you've got the privilege and responsibility to lead, and as always, lead on.